Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today's Tuesday, June 23rd. Where's my voice? Good morning, Jen.
Morning, Sam.
How's it going?
It's going well. How's it going with you?
It's going well. Thank you very much. And that's the show. Thank you very much. See you tomorrow. So, it's a Tuesday. Beautiful. Another warm day in L.A. Summer's officially here, I suppose. And Yeah. So it gets very hot. It's hard to decide what to wear, right? And the lighter, the better, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm. Okay. So have they found the escapees yet? I guess not, huh?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But they seem to be finding more information about them, so...
Yeah, I know. They found some DNA in the cabin and all that stuff, so...
I'm sure at some point they'll find them.
Yeah. Eventually, yeah, they will. It's just a matter of time because you can't run forever.
No.
You know? It's just like, you know, you're dealing against something so much bigger than you. I mean, the thing is you have the entire law enforcement of this country looking for you.
Right.
You know, and the FBI and the police and who knows who else is looking for them. But, you know, I mean, people do crazy things when they don't have anything to lose. I mean, they were on death row, right? They're in for murder, I think.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'm sure they're happy to be out even for a little bit. But the thing is if they got caught, it's going to be, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen to them that's worse than
exactly right
death row, but maybe it would speed up the process or, I mean.
Yeah, they're just going to put them in isolation for years probably, you know.
Well, when is their scheduled, like, sentence, you know?
Oh, who knows? I mean, usually with that stuff, it's like years and years.
I wonder why that is. Like, why put somebody in jail just to make them sit there until then they get killed?
Maybe they want to make sure that they've had enough chance to redeem themselves or maybe to find out that it was wrong or whatever, you know. But I guess they just make it difficult to kill someone, you know.
Which, but it should be.
Yeah.
And they do, they have had instances when they've killed the wrong person.
Right.
So they should do their due diligence. But I do think also, like, rotting in jail is worse than being killed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And maybe that's why they do it, you know. But the interesting thing is not many countries have capital punishment anymore. A lot of countries don't have it, but we do. So, you know, I don't know. I'm for it if it's a deterrent, but I don't know that it is. Obviously, people still commit murders and everything, regardless of the death sentence or not.
Right.
So, who knows?
And what keeps somebody from death row, like if they've committed a murder versus somebody that is on death row, that's committed a murder?
Right.
What's the difference?
The difference is, I guess, what the judge decides, I guess. You know, if
and probably
given
the state.
The death penalty. Well, the state wants to, and they'll sue for it, but ultimately it's the judge. So, you know, sometimes I guess the... you know, it depends because, like, sometimes, for example, when someone is clearly guilty, then they just negotiate whether to kill them or not. You know, like the guy from the Boston bombing and
yeah,
and things like that. You know, when you know who it is.
What happened to the guy that did the Colorado bombing? Colorado shooting.
Right. I'm wondering about that, too. I mean, they never even showed pictures of him. So, you know, they did, but not really in court. So, good question. I'm not sure what happened with him.
Yeah.
Either in jail or sentenced to death. I don't know. But there's a lot of people that should be reconsidered, I guess. I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm for capital punishment or not. I don't think people should be allowed to kill other people. But, you know, maybe eye for an eye.
I don't believe in eye for an eye. I think that is just, you know, continuing the cycle. Mm-hmm. I think prison is fine. I think they need to rework the prison system probably, though, because don't they just let people out, or like they kill people because they don't have space? Like kind of like how they put dogs to sleep because they don't have space in all the shelters?
No, I doubt it. I don't think that'd be a good reason to put people to death because they don't have room in jail.
No, but there is an issue with, like, overcrowding the jails.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. And they're talking about, I mean, they've been talking about it for years, to privatize prisons. And I think in some places they actually have that, where it's a private business that's running it. Because the government, obviously, is not doing a great job at it.
No, and there should be more, like, rehabilitation centers than prisons. I mean, I think that in some cases, I don't know, like, kids, like, what if they grow up in a bad area and they commit a crime, sometimes it's like the nature of where they grew up and they have to be rehabilitated versus just in jail breeding more criminals.
Right.
Some people become worse criminals while they're in jail.
Yeah, but they're in jail.
Right, but then when they get out, or like they find ways to like still do things externally from inside. So I don't know that that's the best solution. Mm-hmm. You're just putting somebody away. You're not changing them.
Right. But do you really think you can change people?
Of course. That's why there's called therapy
and things well, like that. But yeah, if people don't want to change, they're not going to change.
Well, they,
people
maybe they
that
don't
go
know
to
that,
therapy is people that want to be changed.
Yeah, but criminals don't necessarily know they need to be changed, or don't necessarily know like what a better life can be.
Exactly. So how are you going to convince them?
I'm saying in jail. That like there's right. a rehab program.
Right.
Like versus just straight prison.
No, they have a program, but who says it really rehabilitates them?
I think it needs to be better is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But I mean, look, I can understand background and everything, but I don't think there's any excuse to commit a crime. I don't care where you come from. You know, it's simply putting the blame on somebody else. When you're an adult, you should take responsibility for what you do.
Not everybody's taught the same lessons, though.
Right, but that should be the rules of society, you know.
Well, that if would you're be gonna, an ideal world.
If you're not going to live by the rules, no, not really. I mean, we do put them in jail, and, you know, at least we put them away from society. You know, whether they'll be rehabilitated or not, that's another question, but you got to keep them away because they're obviously not willing participants in society and its rules, you know. So, whatever. It's funny how almost everything we discuss is getting political, and I was thinking about not really bringing up politics in the show and stuff because it's like so charged,
yeah.
You know, that I don't know that I want the show to be that serious.
Okay,
you know what I'm saying? So, because I mean, I see on Facebook there's just like I mean there's such a division in this country.
Between it's just the hard
right
to ignore
and the
it.
Left. Yeah, yeah. No, it is. It is. You know, but the point I'm trying to make is this. Liberals are never going to convert conservatives and vice versa. So why even argue? You know what
yeah.
I mean? The thing is that you talk and nobody's listening.
Right.
Right? On both sides. So that's why I don't understand. I mean, people are like sheep sometimes. You know, with me, it's like I'll take the issue one at a time. I don't care if it's leftist or rightist. I'll look at the issue itself and see what's going on.
Right. I mean, for me, it's not really a political thing. For me, it's more just like human behavior.
Well, I think blaming a criminal on his background and saying, you know, that if we... if he had a better background, better childhood, then he wouldn't do this. I don't agree with that.
Well, there's also, I mean, I'm not saying every criminal is that way. I'm saying right. I just don't understand them or know them well enough to say that's why they did what they did.
Right.
So I think it's more up in the air, and like every case is a different story. Also, yeah. just like you said, Arnold Schwarzenegger has, you know, his after school program for kids to keep them off the streets and to give them a better life. Some people don't have access to those things.
Right.
So if there are those kinds of organizations out there, they're there for a reason.
Right.
It's to try and help people grow up to be better people.
Right.
Because they might not have that opportunity. So.
But what about kids that grow in the same neighborhood, in the same environment, and they don't grow up to be criminals?
Well, then that's really great.
Right. So that's what I'm saying.
But
so
maybe they have different parents, or who knows what happened
right.
to them. I don't know. Or maybe they lived on a different street and didn't have to deal with right. gang violence. I don't know. But I'm
right.
just saying that not every criminal is the same person. So,
right. No, obviously. Obviously. I mean, you know, I totally agree with
but
you.
But that's
that
also why I
the
think
same.
They can be rehabilitated.
Right.
Or given the opportunity to, which is why I think our...
You think all of them could?
No, I'm still not saying all of anybody anything. You want like an all or nothing answer. I'm also just speculating what I think.
Okay. Well, I accept it. I mean, I'm just trying to get to the bottom of it. That's all. But yeah, like I said, you know, I mean, I don't know if this is a place for politics and everything. And besides, you know, I sometimes think more than one or two points of view is better. So maybe when we invite people in, we can talk about politics and things like this and kill each other or something, you know.
Awesome.
Yeah. In a couple of minutes, we're going to have a guest calling in. His name is Douglas Richards, and he's an author of a few science fiction books that are amazing. It's not science fiction like going to the moon or anything. It's we'll talk about it. But I've been reading his books, and I'm really impressed. So I contacted him on social networks and invited him on the show. It's always cool to talk to somebody that, I mean, I've had a couple times when there were like maybe a musician or something that that really had some good music but never made it really big. Mm-hmm. And I brought them on the show, and it was amazing to talk to them, you know, because you're a big fan. So not all, you know, not all successful people are really famous and everything, but he's managed to be on the New York Times bestseller list and on the USA Today bestseller list. So I just admire writers. I don't know. They really have discipline, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you been reading anything lately? Any time to read at all?
No time.
No time, huh?
No.
I know. I haven't had much time either. All my books are like sort of like just sitting around ever since my parents came here, and then with the Uber and thing, I really don't have that much free time anymore. So, I mean, I try to see my parents every day. So that takes like 2.5-3 hours out of my day.
Oh, wow.
A very important chunk. But, you know, it's like an hour to drive back and forth, and then a couple hours there. Maybe
they're that far away? An hour?
No, each way is about 25 minutes.
Oh, got it.
So round trip is about an hour.
Got it.
Yeah, with the traffic and everything. And, yeah, I mean, it's totally enjoyable, but it requires a lot. So, but I figured, you know, now they've been here for a while, maybe I don't need to go every day. I can call them and...
Are they enjoying their time here?
Yeah, very much. I think my mom's turned around the corner, and now she's happy. I don't think she misses home that much.
Well, that's
anymore.
Good.
Anymore, yeah. I guess there's always resistance in the beginning and stuff, you know. Especially with my mom, and she's so stubborn.
Yeah.
Can't even tell you.
Well, that's great that you got them here.
Yeah. Now, I think maybe this might help a couple of people. A lot of people have like back problems and stuff. You know, a lot of people do. And my mom has especially bad like osteoporosis or something, which makes your bones sort of deteriorate. So she's had like constant pain, like, you know, chronic pain for like 5-6 years. And it's hard for me to imagine how you can live like that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's always hard for her to move around and stuff. And so I found this thing in the paper. They advertised in USA Today like a full page ad for the special belt that inflates. And it actually like pulls your muscles and everything. It takes the strain off your spine. So I'm really looking forward to that. We're supposed to get it today. And then... I'm going to report whether it works or not.
Cool.
So here comes our guest now. We're going to talk to Douglas E. Richards right now. Doug, are you on the air with us?
I am. Thanks, Sam.
Yes. Thank you for calling in, Doug. Where are you calling us from this morning?
San Diego.
You're in San Diego. That's cool. Do you ever visit L.A.?
Sometimes I do, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Did you grow up there in San Diego, or did you end up there later in life?
No, I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, believe it or not. And then I got tired of the cold. I went to, I got an MBA at the University of Chicago and then a Master's in Molecular Biology at the University of Wisconsin. Both very northern, very brutally cold in the winter and hot and humid in the summer. So I really made it my mission to come out to San Diego and enjoy the perfect climate.
Yeah, that's true. And you know what amazes me is people that come from the cold climate, they always say, you never get used to it, you know? It's like, that cold is like, doesn't matter if you grew up with it, you never get used to it.
No, and you know, you have to dig out your car out from under snow.
Right.
You know, whenever you go anywhere, you got to get out the little scraper and scrape the windows. And no, it's just it's paradise here in San Diego. It's getting a little crowded, though, as you know.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, every good place eventually attracts a lot of people, and it gets crowded. I know.
Exactly.
But I imagine it's a good place to be writing books and everything. Now. So you've written several books, and I was telling our listeners and Jen that I've read a few of your books. You've written several, and I'm in the process of going through each one of them. I read Wired and Amped about a year ago, and then I rediscovered you, and I read Mind's Eye and now Brainweb. So let's talk about this. You know what amazed me is when, after I read Wired, that movie with Bradley Cooper came out, Limitless. And I thought, wait a minute, this story has been told already. And by Douglas E. Richards. So, I mean, did it ever occur to you that the story was similar?
Yeah, I mean, actually, Wired came out. I wrote that, you know, many years before the Bradley Cooper movie came out.
Right.
And it's a little bit frustrating as an author. But, you know, I mean, there are similarities. So just for your audience's sake, you know, the novel revolves around kind of a genetic engineer, a woman who engineered a way to kind of make her savant-like, you know, super intelligent in all facets of the intellect by taking a pill, and for like an hour she can be super brilliant, but it comes at a cost of kind of making her sociopathic. And, you know, so that's kind of the premise, and that was very similar to the premise of Limitless, the movie, but there's so many different ways you can go, and my novel is just entirely different from the movie, just as there's been 1,000 different zombie movies and vampire movies, and so you can have kind of a similar premise and just have much different takes on it. I'd like to think that, I won't, you know, people who can read the book and watch the movie decide which they like better, but...
I liked your book much better, I must tell you, and I think, and I agree with you, they're totally different stories, and you know, I was really like captured by the story, you know, because your imagination is amazing to be able to go to these places and build, you know, and with suspended belief, you're able to read this book and go, wow, you know, what if this actually happened? And, you know, then in later books, you talk about being able to surf the internet through your mind and being able to read minds, which presents such great opportunities for stories. That how did you come up with some of these ideas, Doug?
Well, I wish I could remember that, how I came up with that idea. So the second set of books you're referring to, the first is, you know, where they can make themselves super intelligent, but at a cost. And the second one that you're talking about is Mind's Eye, is the first one, and then the standalone sequel is called Brainweb. And there, you know, this guy wakes up without a memory. Everybody's trying to kill him, and he finds out that he's got an implant in his brain, an electronic implant that allows him to surf the web. It's tied into his visual and auditory cortices. So it's almost like seeing a movie in his head, in his mind's eye. You know, it's like a giant screen in front of his eyes is what it seems to him whenever he surfs the web with his thoughts. And then he also finds out that he can read minds perfectly. So, I mean, just... he can just sort through another person's mind like it's his own, discover every memory, every thought, every ATM password, and so yeah, it does open up a lot of possibilities for storytelling. And what I try to do in all of my books is, first, I use accurate science. So I have a master's in molecular biology. I research the heck out of my books, and lately in my notes I've been putting, you know, 5 or 10 pages of what's accurate and what's not, and a lot of it is really very accurate. Intel has been working on an implant chip to allow people to surf the web with their thoughts for years now.
Wow.
And people have actually, you know, there are video game makers now. You can control video games a little bit with your thoughts, artificial limbs. So people are working on, you know, connecting kind of the electrical impulses of the brain to converting your thoughts into commands.
Right.
So it's all, you know, it's unlikely and it's far in the future, but it's certainly we're heading in that direction. And so I try to look at kind of the global consequences of things like this. So it sounds great. Wow, wouldn't that be great if you could read minds?
Right.
But when you really think about it, you know, people lie to each other all the time to spare their feelings.
Right.
And a lot of, you think a lot of dark thoughts all the time, even with your best friend. If they're saying something boring or annoying, you know, you're thinking to yourself, God, I wish he'd shut the heck up. It's really boring. but meanwhile, you're smiling at him.
Right.
And, or, you know, you see a pretty girl and maybe you have some thoughts that would be best kept to yourself.
Right.
If you're a, you know, red-blooded American male. So if you could read minds, it could be really more troubling than you might think.
Yeah.
And surfing the web, I mean, people are addicted to the web as it is. But imagine you could be on a date or with your wife and be watching a movie while she's talking to you without
right.
anybody knowing.
Right.
You know, you could do your banking. I mean, there's just a lot of possibilities. And so it doesn't really, I don't dwell on all the possibilities, but I go through a lot of the different pros and cons of the technology. And of course, it's all, you know, these are thrillers. So,
right.
you know, there's a lot of action and a lot of twists and turns and philosophy and science and ethics. But again, what I like to do is take a technology that's possible in the near future and look at really all the ramifications of the technology.
Yeah, and it's amazing because you have a writing style that flows. You know, it's an easy read, very interesting, and it gets you to think a lot. You know, like in Brainweb right now, Jen, the terrorists take over the Academy Awards.
Oh wow!
Yeah. So the thing is that they threaten to kill everybody and all that stuff, and it's you start thinking, wow, it's like an impossible situation that could totally happen.
Yeah.
You know,
which is scarier.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that one. That was a good. I enjoyed that opening, and I used actual stars. You know, famous stars.
Yeah.
And actually, one of them who's very famous ended up being killed by the terrorists, but most of them. Didn't, but I mean, the idea was they invent this explosive that can't be detected, and they, you know, they tunnel into the theater, and they take over, and they basically issue these demands to the president, and you know, the Academy Awards. The reason I chose that is it has the biggest global audience of anything except world soccer.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many millions of people around the world watching the Academy Awards, and so he says, you know, if you cut off the TV coverage, I'm going to blow the place, mm-hmm. and everybody's going to die. And there's about 4,000, 5,000 people in the stands at the Academy Awards, and I'm going to kill everybody. So I want the TV to continue on, and every hour I'm going to kill a hugely famous star in front of the world, unless my demands are met. And, you know, I thought that was kind of a fun, not fun, but, you know, perilous, thrilling start to the novel. And then, of course, I get into a lot of other things, but, you know, first they've got to extricate themselves from that problem.
Right. And don't give it all away because I'm reading it now and I don't want to know what's going to happen until I get
there.
Okay,
I won't.
You also write young readers' books as well, and I wanted to touch on that for just a moment because that fascinates me too. Tell me, like, for example, how differently you write when you write for young readers, like The Prometheus Project, and that's a series that you wrote, right?
Exactly. So,
right.
So that was actually the first thing that I did. I started writing middle grade adventures, and I found out that adults really loved them too, which really surprised me. But the idea was, you know, when my kids were growing up, there was a lot of great fantasy for children. There was Harry Potter and everything under the sun, but there wasn't really great science fiction. And when I grew up, I loved science fiction with accurate science, mind-blowing stuff that, you know, I learned that, you know, why you couldn't travel faster than the speed of light. When you did travel at the speed of light, time stopped for you. That's absolutely been proven a million times over, you know, Einstein's theory, but they even have to make adjustments for things that are traveling fast to get the GPS to work. They have to use Einstein's equations.
Mm.
And so, you know, actual science, to me, is more mind-blowing even than the magic in Harry Potter. And so, you know, that's what encouraged me to have a love of science, and I wanted to. So I wrote, you know, middle grade that science fiction because I thought there was a gap there. There really wasn't anything good. And I just wanted to have it fun, lots of cliffhangers, and it's been endorsed by science teachers around the country and even the world, even in England. One of their primary education science journals did a big review and said it was just, you know, ideal for kids, and it's been used as a read-aloud in a ton of classrooms. So it's a series, and again, it's a science fiction adventure, but it all has accurate science. Now, the difference between that and adult books, the kids' books are a lot harder to write.
Really?
Because I'm an adult, when I write the adult books, I can just write whatever sentence I want. If I think of a perfect way to say something, then I just say it, and I know that my audience is going to understand it, and you know, it's not going to be too sophisticated, and my vocabulary is going to be fine. With the kids' book, I can think of perfect ways to say something, but then I worry, you know, is the vocabulary a little bit too difficult? Is the sentence sophistication a little bit too much? And I don't write down to the kids it by any means, but it's a constant having to check myself to make sure that I'm writing to the appropriate grade level.
Right. Wow. I guess that totally makes sense. You know, it would take extra effort when you're writing to a younger audience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because, you know, with adults, I can just let myself go in terms of theme, in terms of, you know, violence.
Wording, yeah.
Not that they're overly violent, but, you know, you want to kind of rein it in for the kids. I mean, it's perfectly G-rated. My kids' stuff and my adult stuff is a little bit higher rating, but, it can be more challenging to write the kids' stuff. And right now, since the Wired became a New York Times bestseller, and, you know, my adult thrillers have really taken off, I haven't been able to come back to the kids' books because there's such a demand for the adult ones.
Yeah. And isn't that amazing? I mean, that there's actually demand for new books from you, you know? I mean, it's a great feeling, you know? And I feel the same way, too. It's like, what happens after I finish all of Douglas's books? Then what? So, but you have been you've been pretty productive, you know? I mean, I remember I just first discovered Wired on my Kindle, and then I was so excited to find out there was a sequel to it, and then to find out that you actually wrote several other books as well. And, you know, it's either you like your imagination or you don't, and I love the way you think. I think you have two books also, Quantum Lens, that discusses, that's ripped just from the current events, you know, from the headlines.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because I had it take place in Iran and Syria, and you know, when I published it, then events in real life took over with ISIS, so it's kind of a parallel universe where those events didn't happen yet. But it's amazing the pace of events around the world when you write thrillers. You know, sometimes get overtaken by real news.
Right.
But you know, that one I really loved because I think it had a lot of clever. A web of ideas where I took a lot of different disparate scientific theories and meshed them together in a way that I think really, really kind of works. And that was actually been my best reviewed novel. So that was a lot of fun. And you know, I keep on writing, and it gets harder to come up with plots.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Every single time, because it's like I throw my best stuff in every book.
Right.
You know, every interesting thought I've ever had, I put in every book, and then I've got to start the next one. And, you know, I panic a little bit, like, what am I going to put in this one?
Yeah.
I've already done everything I could think of.
Right. Now, so do you feel that urge to keep writing all the time? I mean, obviously, you've got a body of work already.
Yeah, you know, I have to be honest, it's you know, this is my full-time career now, you know, I've got two kids in college, out of state, that's costing me about $1 trillion a year, and I wish that was an exaggeration, but it's not. And, you know, so one of the, I mean, I certainly feel like I have to write, because that's my job and that's my career. And you know, so that's important. But you know, I also want to. It's just I feel like I have a certain level of quality that I'd like to maintain. I think some authors, after they've written a certain number of books, their quality really starts slipping, and they become famous anyway. I mean, you know, people buy their books even, and then they give them bad ratings on Amazon, but they still buy them.
Yeah.
But I don't want to do that. I want to keep my quality really high and keep the twist really exciting and interesting. It's just so hard to come up with them over and over again.
Yeah.
And so it's getting harder and harder. I mean, right now I'm trying to plot my next novel, and I'm pulling out my hair and banging my head against the wall.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge. I just wish there was an easier way to do it. I love the writing.
Yeah.
Just coming up with the idea for the plot
is
just so tough.
Right. You know what I think is, maybe you should put it out there, you know, maybe on the social networks. It's like, you know, have people throw ideas at you, and when something works, just make a story out of it.
you know, I was thinking about that, honestly.
Yeah,
I really. It's so funny that you mentioned that. I was, you know, and the other thing I do is I subscribe to about five different science magazines: Discover, Scientific American, New Scientist. you know, all kinds, and I scour the web for new science stories every day. And so, I mean, I'm constantly reading science for ideas, science and technology. I'm a member of the Futurist Society. So I'm trying to get ideas that way. And then, you know, there are certain novels that I've written that I go outside on my lawn chair with a stack of 100, you know, Scientific American magazines and go page by page until I get an idea.
Yeah. Well, at least it's a fun thing to do, you know, so it's something you love to do. And yeah, you're very fortunate to be doing something you love for a living, you know.
I really am very, very lucky. And, you know, the fan base, it's been great. There's hundreds of thousands of readers out there who are very dedicated, who passionately love my stuff. And, of course, there are people who hate my stuff, but fortunately it's, you know, maybe 5 or 10%, which I'm very pleased by, because you can't really please 100% of the people ever.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, out the gate it's 50-50. So I congratulate you for that. I mean, you know, I can see where people would be sort of like following you and creating reader clubs or whatever, you know, just being fans. Because, I don't know, for some reason I felt the same way when I was reading your books. It's sort of like, this guy really gets it. He really can write a story that keeps me up all night and keeps me reading all night. And
Well, that's what I mean, that's the number one comment I get. I mean, I'm compared a lot to Michael Crichton and others, but the number one comment I get is, you know, it's really, it's page turner. They're exciting. I can't put them down. And probably that's because I have a real short attention span myself. And
yeah.
When I'm reading books, it takes so much to get me hooked. Which is a bad thing. I mean, I just there's so many books I just can't get into. So for my own books, I really try to keep them going fast. And there are times when I finish a book and I think, oh my God, that is so slow and boring. And then I put it out there and the first 100 people write, oh my God, I couldn't put it down. I finished in one day.
Right.
And you know, so I hold up to a very high standard to hook people. And then the other thing is, like you said, food for thought. I mean, I throw a lot of philosophy and ethics and, you know, just a lot of things for people to think about. And you know, some controversial, some not. But I want to keep their mind working and thinking about different possibilities. And I've got, you know, some spirituality and religion thrown in there. And I've got, you know, the ethics of scientific discoveries and you know, and so I think people who are my fans really appreciate that stuff.
Yeah, very cool. I mean, it must feel really, really good to know that hundreds of thousands of people have read your books and that found that what you do is actually entertaining and you know, I mean, educational as well. Just like you mentioned, you know, you're bringing in new scientific things, ideas, philosophies, and it allows people to think, you know, more than just reading a novel. So I can see why people admire you and so forth. You're also in great company, I noticed, with other authors on Amazon's list of authors for action and things like that. So kudos to you. Now, we're running out of time, but I did want to ask you, self-publish at all, or were you able to find a publisher with the first book?
So I wrote Wired in, like, I think probably 1920, basically, a million years ago. And, you know, in fact, I think I might have had pagers in it instead of cell phones in one of the first drafts. And it kind of sat around, and I got an agent, and Simon & Schuster loved it. But finally decided, you know, it's just getting harder and harder to publish with the traditional publishers. So I set it aside, and I was running out of money because I quit biotech. I was an executive, and I quit the job to try to write. And so finally I decided I've got to go back into biotech, and I set it on a shelf. And then in 2011, I was seeing that ebooks were doing really well, and people had success doing that. So I thought, you know, I've only had a few people ever read this, and it's really depressing because Simon & Schuster loved it and other publishers loved it, but they just weren't quite willing because they didn't know what category it fit into. Was it science fiction? Was it a thriller?
Right.
So they passed on it. And so I just decided I'm going to put it on Amazon myself and see what happens. And I figured, you know, if 10 people read it, I mean, I spent a lot of hundreds of hours writing it.
Yeah.
So even if I could get 10 people to read it, that would be exciting.
Yeah.
And it went viral. And within 3 months, I was a New York Times bestseller.
Very cool, man. Very
and
nice.
Hundreds of thousands of people. Actually, by now, probably a million people have read Wired.
Wow.
And,
that's a lot of people.
You know, so, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was really exciting. And then I wrote Amped, and that's the sequel, and put it on there. And you know, it's very, financially, it's very rewarding if you self-publish. So for the third one, The Cure, I went with Macmillan, which is one of the top five publishers in the world, and they paid me a six-figure advance, and they put it out in hardcover, and they put out a page advertisement, a whole page advertisement in Scientific American, and, you know, I did dozens and dozens and dozens of radio shows. I was on Coast to Coast with George Norrie for 3 hours, and and did that. And I decided, you know, I really want to keep self-publishing because the traditional publishers are very slow. I mean, they were great. Macmillan, the Tor division, which does science fiction, Tor Forge, they were great. They had a publicist for me, and they, like I said, they set me up with a bunch of radio interviews and other publicity stuff. And the hardcover looked beautiful, but it just takes like a year and a half to 2 years after you write the book to get it out there. Mm. When I write on my own, I can publish it the next day.
That's
so
true.
And they wanted me to wait and not put other books out because they didn't want anything to interfere with the book. And you know, actually, even with a six-figure advance, I lost money because right now on Amazon, you get 70% of sales come to the author directly, and there's no agent fees, et cetera. So, you know, just for my fans, you know, I could price it lower. People are really mad because the traditional publisher priced, you know, the hardback was $25 and the ebook was like $10. Right. And people would complain to me, "Hey, you've got to lower this price. I'm a big fan, but this is ridiculous." And I would say, I don't have any control. I sold my rights.
Right.
I, you know, and I wrote them and I said, "Please, can you lower the price?" And they wouldn't do it.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I don't understand, though, people, you know, protesting things like this. I mean, this is business, you know. I mean, you price it any way you want. And, you know, I don't think $10, I don't even think $20 is a lot for a book. For the effort that the writer puts into it. I mean, my God, you know. And books don't sell in millions like records do and things like that, you know. So,
well, you know, what's happening is that Amazon and others are teaching, this generation thinks that everything should be free.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, people, my son can get a movie that just came out in the theater yesterday. He can get it for free today.
Right.
It's amazing that there's, I mean, my books are all pirated. You know, I actually hired an agency to try to clean up and get rid of the all the pirated sites. But I think what Amazon is teaching people is that, you know, books should basically be free. And it was frustrating sometimes when I had people write and say, "Look, I'm your biggest fan. I've loved every one of your books, but I'm not going to pay $9.99 for a book."
Wow.
And I'm thinking, you know, you pay $9.99 to see a movie
exactly.
in a theater. And, you know, my books last longer than 2 hours.
Exactly, exactly. No, I mean, I don't go for that, you know. Just ignore these people, Doug, and keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, that's one thing about writing a book. It's going to live on forever. And next generations will be able to read it and so forth. And it must make you feel proud, you know, being on the bestseller list and having so many fans. And, you know, it's not... Because I know writing can probably get pretty lonely, right, when you write.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. No, it can. And, you know, especially when you don't go into an office.
Right.
You know, it's certainly a marriage tester when you work out of your house, too.
Yeah.
You're with your wife a lot. A lot of hours. So, you know, it's not for the faint-hearted, but, you know, it's a lot of fun, and it's nice that I don't have to worry about rush hour traffic. I can, you know, roll out of bed in my pajamas and go upstairs and write.
There you go.
But, you know, I think the writing is the fun part, like I said. The painful part is the plotting, and it is a little bit lonely, but, it's been great. You know, I'm very lucky that it went viral the way it did. If not, I'd still be in biotech, which was fine. But this is so much more fun, and I get, you know, people write me every day. You know, I put my email out there all the time for people to use. You know, I have a Facebook account,
right.
Douglas E. Richards Author, that you know, I interact with anybody who writes to me, I write back.
I know, and you did. I wrote to you, and you wrote me back, and you were kind enough to friend me and or accept my request, and that was very cool. Then I was able to invite you on the show. So you're very accessible, and I think that's very important, too, because just like other artists, people like to connect with their people. I see that you also at Comic-Con and things like that, so... So you are accessible, and that's a good thing. Everybody go out, check out Douglas E. Richards. Go to DouglasERichards.com to find out everything. You can discover more about the books, or just look up Wired and Amped and the rest of the books on Amazon. And they're amazing, and most of the reviews are great, and the bad reviews are just haters. And yeah, it doesn't really matter. It does, you know, you've got, I mean, just the fact that you've got hundreds of reviews is got to be rewarding enough for you.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I've got thousands of five-star reviews, but, you know, it's funny, you know, like, I was looking at Inside Out from Pixar, the new movie, and you know, the audience is 92% favorable, and there's so many reviews that say, this is the best movie of the year, this is incredible, I can't believe they could make a perfect movie like this, and then there are one-star reviews where they just say, I hate it, you know, it's so interesting, human nature,
yeah,
that no two people can agree, even something that you think... You know what I mean? It's really amazing.
Right, right. But, you know, like Jen says, you know, if you don't have something good to say, don't say it. But, you know, the internet people don't care. They're anonymous. They can say whatever they want. And some people just get their kicks of putting other people's work down. And I don't get that.
Right.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, what I read, I mean, you get a little thick skin, but in the beginning I was very thin skinned, and the first, you know, hundreds of reviews were mostly five stars when it went viral. And I read an article online that said basically what happens is the more exposure the book gets, the more famous it gets, the bigger it gets, it starts reaching people who have no business reading it. So it's a science mm-hmm. fiction book, and because it's becoming so popular, people who hate science fiction say, oh, I'll give it a try.
Right.
And, you know, they really shouldn't be reading it. And you know, the article makes a good point. And, you know, I could read the best romance novel ever written, and I'm going to hate it because I just don't like romance novels.
Right.
You know, but it could be the best one ever written.
Right.
And so that's, you know, you get a lot of that. And you're right, on Amazon, it gets a little bit strange. You get, you know, people who say, I just got a new Kindle and I couldn't download the book. One star.
Exactly. One star. I know. I hate that, man.
Yeah, it's like I couldn't download the book. You haven't read it.
Yeah, and what do you want with me?
Right. How is that my fault?
Yeah.
But anyway.
No, you're right. You're right. Well, Doug, thank you so much for joining us. Fascinating stuff. Again, DouglasERichards.com. You can find out links to Facebook and all the other social networks. You can find summaries of all the books. And like I said, go on Amazon, and also you're pretty much all over the place there. So that's cool. You can get printed books and Kindles and everything. So no reason not to read those books. And and if someone doesn't like science fiction, I would not categorize this as science fiction, you know. Not the way I would like your young reader novels like The Prometheus Project. I haven't read it, but just the cover pictures, you can tell this is about like fantasy worlds, remote world, faraway worlds. And what you're talking about is things that go on every day.
You right. Know. No, it's called a techno thriller. It's like Michael Crichton used to do.
Yes.
But it's kind of in the near future, using a technology advance that we're working on now and just kind of exploring that. So it's not like, you know, like Guardians of the Galaxy science fiction.
Right.
It's you know, it's more near term stuff that is more thriller. But anyway, I really appreciate you know, having me on the show. It's been great, and it's always fun to talk to somebody who's read the books and enjoyed them.
It helps,
so,
right?
You know, keep in touch, and you know, again, anybody, my email is online everywhere on Amazon. So if anybody ever, you know, reads one of my books and wants to write me about it, feel free. It's always fun. Like Sam said, it's kind of lonely work, so great to hear from readers. And anyway, thank you so much for having me on.
Of course, and I highly recommend the books, everybody. If you love to read, you like action, this is the way to go. Doug, thank you again for joining us, and all the best to you. Hopefully, there'll be a new novel out soon, and I'll be the first one to get it.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. See, it's exciting. Now I can talk to the... I mean, I talk to the person whose mind is behind those stories.
Yeah. You know? So, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I know. So, yeah, I mean, and a phone interview got half an hour. I mean, that's very unusual. So...
Well, you're a fan, so you were really interested.
Yeah. No, but I really like... I am fascinated by writers, you know, because... Right. And we've had writers here on the show, in the studio, and also on the phone. And it just amazes me, you know, to be able to write something like this. You don't know if anybody's ever going to read it or buy it, but you still do it.
Yeah.
You know, that's art. That's art. Let's see. Okay, so... Dick Van Patten died.
Who's
that? You
know
who he is? Well, this was a show from the 70s, so you probably aren't familiar with it. It's called 8 is Enough. And it was like a family comedy show. They had like 8 kids in the family. That's why they call it 8 is Enough. Or maybe they were all together. There were 8. I don't remember because I never really watched the show, but it was very popular for many mm-hmm. seasons, many years. So he died at 86. And the funny thing is, I used to go to Starbucks a lot right down the street from me, and I would see him there almost every time with his friends. They would come in, have some coffee in the morning and things like that. So I always recognized him there. And one time I wanted to say hi, but, you know, he was too much into conversation. And
yeah.
I didn't want to interrupt. You know how it is. You don't want to seem like this weird fan or something. You know?
Right. And plus, you know that they're people, so they're doing, like, they're living their life, and you don't want right. to just, like, interrupt.
Right. Although, you know, I mean, they expect that, I think, and maybe some of them revel in it, too, you know, the fact that...
they're recognized.
Yeah, they're recognized. People walk up to them and things like that, mm-hmm. you know. So, yeah. But so he's dead at 86. Rest in peace, my friend. Another death, the Titanic composer. His name is James Horner. Didn't you mention the plane crash in California the other day?
No.
No? Where did I hear about
it? But I did
that?
See that was on the news.
Yeah. So apparently it was him, and he was an award-winning, Academy Award-winning composer. He's done a lot of movies, music for a lot of movies, and he crashed in Central California on Monday. And they're saying that he had several planes, and he had flown many times. So who knows? You know, who knows what happened there? But that's scary stuff, yeah.
I'm sure we'll hear more about what went wrong.
Yeah. Britney Spears is split up with her boyfriend.
Oh, really?
Charlie Ebersole. She tweeted a picture with another man.
Who's the other man?
I don't know. They're not saying. It's probably somebody who's not famous. Yeah. But, yeah, and they're saying that people actually thought, their friends thought, they were actually going to get married and stuff.
Were they engaged?
No, I don't think so. But people were hoping that they would be, I guess.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, well, Britney Spears.
Yeah. Well, they've been together for 8 months, so they probably never had a chance to get engaged yet.
Right.
Yeah. Also, try to squeeze in all the news that's fit to print. Kim Kardashian and Kanye
are having a boy.
Expecting a boy. Yeah. And she tweeted about it. It amazes me how everybody has to tweet about these things, you know, talking to their loved ones publicly.
Is that what the tweet was?
Yeah, I mean, she wrote to him, she says, "You will be the best daddy to our new son."
I'm sure part of it is so that it's for the fans.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, and they're saying they're not going to name him South.
That's good.
Yeah, they'll already have Northwest, right?
I'm sure that they'll name him something cool, though.
Yeah. Sean Diddy Combs arrested.
For what?
For an assault with a kettlebell at UCLA. They're thinking that he went to a practice of his son or something, and I guess he beat up the coach.
Oh, God.
I don't know.
That's silly.
I know. Anyway, that's it for today, folks. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Douglas E. Richards, for joining us for a fascinating interview. And let's see, tomorrow we still don't have a guest, but that's fine. We always have fun here on the show.
Yep.
Jen, thank you so much again.
Thank you, Sam.
As always, thanks everybody, and we'll see you tomorrow.
listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.